Housing Policy Committee meeting. The meeting is hereby called to order.
Right. Welcome to our virtual meeting. We are going to cover a few basic items before beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email. To members and city staff, members, if you are able, please activate your video for purposes of quorum and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. The chair and committee staff are responsible for muting and unmuting committee members, though typically we don't actually follow that part. Members can rename themselves if they wish to add pronouns after your name. Use the raise hand feature when you'd like to be recognized to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. During any roll call, all participants will be unmuted briefly. Staff, click raise hand when you are asked a question. The chair will do their best to call on committee members in the order in which hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. We do not have any members of the public registered to speak. All right, so chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Our first item on our agenda tonight is the approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes from August 28th?
I move we approve the minutes from the August 28th meeting.
Thank you. Moved by Mike Tarby. Do we have a second?
I will second.
Thank you, Alder. Do we have any discussion on the minutes? Great. Trying to remember, how do we want to do a vote on the minutes? It's just we assume consent unless there's dissent.
Yes, assume unanimous consent unless you see a raised hand otherwise.
Okay. And then all right. Yep. Seeing no raised hands, the motion passes. Thank you for approving the minutes. The next item is public comment. We have no registered speakers still for public comment during the meeting, but we have received comments on items 3 and 4. Those comments are available in Legistar and will be part of the public record. Okay, thank you. We are ready to move to item 2 on the agenda, Legistar number 89916. Amending several sections of Chapter 28 to reduce minimum lot width and lot area within certain zoning districts and to reduce the rear setback for alley loaded one-story attached garages. And I believe we have a presentation associated with this item. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Yes. So I'm Jacob Moskowitz. I'm one of the assistant zoning administrators here. I'm just going to give a short presentation actually about the presentation covers all three of those items. I'm not sure if that's okay to take those other two out of order, but
yes, we'll take two, 3, and 4 together for your presentation. Okay. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks. Let me just share real quick. All right. So the presentation I have here today is for the latest in the series of housing forward changes. You might recall we had another package at the July meeting of this committee. And so this is the sort of the next stage in the housing forward changes to the zoning code. The three changes we mentioned, the chair mentioned the Legistar numbers here, the just so that the committee is aware and the public is aware, the staff memos for all three changes are on Legistar, so you can also peruse those and see the staff memos and recommendations, but I will also just explain them in detail here. So there's three changes here. Number one, the first one helps with it's helps to divide with lot divisions, sorry, and for new subdivisions by reducing the lot area lot width and some rear yard setback requirements in various residential zoning districts. Number two, simplifies the height transition between commercial mixed use and employment districts and residential zoning districts. And the third change allows 2 units in or an ADU to be 2 units, so allows additional small scale missing middle housing on existing lots. So to start with the changes in lot area and width, and then the rear yard setback. These are modest reductions in some of our residential zoning districts in lot area. So the total square footage required for a lot. Width, which is we would measure at the front yard setback, the width between the side property lines, and then the rear yard setback, so the distance between the back of the building and the rear property line. Small adjustments like this can have a relatively large impact on the ability to divide parcels and into additional traditional lots like this, or also what we call deep residential lots, otherwise known as flag lots, which we talked about at the July meeting. Those changes impacted the creation of flag lots as well. So this is somewhat related to that change, allowing easier lot divisions into flag lots. So this. On this slide, there's an example of the SRC1, which is our lowest intensity residential zoning district. It shows the current, 8,000 square foot lot minimum, 30 foot front yard setback required, 35 foot rear yard setback required. And this is an example of what the new code language would be, the proposed changes, reducing that to 6,000 square feet, still 30 feet in the front, still 6 feet on the side, but 30 feet in the rear. Another example here, SRC2, so stepping it up one level, a slightly more intense residential zoning district, showing sort of the numbers here. I don't have to get into the individual numbers for each district, but showing these sort of modest reductions in required lot area and rear yard setback. So here's an example of how a large corner lot, like this one in SRC2, this is like a half acre corner lot, so not an unheard of lot size out there, could be divided here into four separate lots, which could provide additional home ownership opportunities, on an area of the lot that is not currently occupied by housing, could be split off. Someone could buy a single family home or a 2 unit on any of the newly created lots. Under the current zoning code, based on the width and the setbacks and lot area, this lot could be divided into three potential new lots. But with this proposal, that would increase to four. So, an idea of the, or it gives you an example of the sort of modest changes that this might make to, the size of the lots, but also then could potentially increase the amount of housing that we could provide, especially that missing middle and owner-occupied housing. Another example here is what I mentioned earlier, the flag lot, the deep residential lot, which is what it's called in the zoning code. So our earlier changes in July reduced the lot width for or the width of the flag pole, if you will, the access to the rear lot to 10 feet in width. So the proposal before you now is to slightly reduce the width of the main part of the lot, the existing part of the lot, to accommodate more lot divisions into deep residential lots. So that's one of the purposes of it. And here's an example of an SRC1 lot that's relatively deep, relatively long, and could be split into two lots under these proposed changes. So we have here a map of the city, and this is actually a map that you have seen before. This is a map that we was provided in the July meeting to kind of show when we made those changes to lot divisions where this impact might be felt, where there might be opportunities to add additional lots to do deep residential lots or otherwise. So this kind of shows you where those changes that were adopted in July may have added that capability. And then to contrast that, under these changes, What's shown here in yellow or gold is the areas that these changes would involve. So as you can see, it expands the areas of the city. The previous map, it's relatively concentrated in a few areas that had larger lot types. This proposed change would allow it for it in more areas, giving some more opportunities across the city. One other thing that this code change does is it reduces the required setback for an attached garage projection. We currently have this exception in some of our districts, like the TRC3 zoning district. And what I have up here on the screen is an example of a neighborhood that was built with TRC3 zoning. It's on the southwest side. And as you can see, it allows alley-loaded garages attached to in a single family home, and the garages can be closer to the alley than the rest of the house in the rear yard setback. So this proposal would allow that exception in all residential districts. We anticipate the impact will be mostly felt in newly created neighborhoods and newer neighborhoods. That's where most of the alley loaded housing types in Madison are. We do have some older areas of the city that have alleys, but predominantly we're seeing that as more of a new housing type. So this would provide some flexibility for new neighborhoods to be built under multiple zoning districts rather than the few that allow that exception today. So it provides some additional flexibility for housing types and for zoning districts. It also will extend that rear yard exception off of the alley to what we call single family attached, which is most people would commonly know that as a townhouse. So it's, row houses, side by side houses that are attached, but could be on their own individual lots. It would expand the exception to that housing type and make that housing type easier to construct, which is something that we've heard as feedback, is that we would like to see more of that. So it removes a particular barrier to that sort of townhouse, single family attached construction. So the next change, number two, is in regard to what we call height transition areas. So an important thing to know about height transition, the zoning code requires this only in areas where a commercial, mixed use, or employment district is immediately adjacent to a residential district. So this does not it doesn't take into account the use of the site, either the residential side or the commercial side. It doesn't take into account how the property is used. It's only relevant to the zoning district that it's in. And under current let's see. So currently there's that requirement to step back floors above the second floor, and I'll provide some examples here. Here's an example. This is off of Regent Street on the near west side. It's another example off of Monroe Street, also on the near west side. You can kind of see the step back here on the upper floor. And then this is a mid-block example off of East Johnson Street on the near east side, kind of showing how it steps down from the commercially zoned property on the right to the residentially zoned property on the left. So here's sort of a helpful graphic to show what the current requirement is. The current code requires that at the rear or side yard setback line, so let's say a building has a 20-foot rear yard setback, we would take the point that's 20 feet from the rear property line. At a point 25 feet above that setback, the building must be stepped back at a 45-degree angle. So the easy way to think about that is for every foot in height that it increases, you have to come back a foot from the line. So that, as you might imagine, makes it's does it does provide a height transition, which is an important part of what zoning does. But it also can prevent certain buildings from being built if they would be within that height transition, and without obtaining a conditional use approval. The current code does allow for conditional use approvals to exceed that height limit. So there is a possibility of an exception. This code change would not eliminate that exception. You would still be able to get a conditional use to exceed the height transition. The what it shows here too in the residential or in the adjacent district. So the reason why 35 feet is called out here is because even in our lowest intensity residential districts, the height limit is no less than 35 feet. So the height limit in the adjacent residential district is actually higher than the point at which we would start the height transition. So what this code change proposes is to synchronize the point at which we start that height transition with the maximum allowable building in the adjacent zoning district. Here's an example of a building that was recently approved with that conditional use approval. This is a building off of University Avenue. We included it on the slide because it's sort of a helpful illustration of what was required as far as the height transition conditional use. You can see that they showed the location of their rear yard setback line, and then they showed the 45 degree angled line that demonstrates the stories above that requiring a conditional use approval for height transition. And under these changes, that conditional use approval is still available. There's still that exception process. So the proposal would increase the, as I mentioned, the would increase the height at which the transition starts to mirror the allowable height in the adjacent zoning district. So this is an example of a lower intensity district with a 35-foot height limit next door. This would propose to allow a building to be 35 feet in height, just like the neighboring property, and then begin the height transition from that point. On this slide, there's some more information about or some highlighting of the potential units that might be within that height transition area today that under this change would not be, so would not require a conditional use for extra height. A modest change, but potentially could add additional dwelling units or additional floor area to the building. Another way to look at this change is that not all the height limits in the residential districts are the same. So the example that we gave previously was for a lower intensity residential district. The higher intensity residential districts have higher height limits. So this is an example of one where the height limit is 52 feet. Under current code, you would still have to start that height transition at 25 feet, even though a 52-foot building could be built right across the property line at the setback line. What this proposes is to change that to mirror the height limit on the adjacent property to provide that consistency in the setbacks. And it shows kind of here how two or so stories of this building might be impacted by that. And then the final change is concerning ADUs. So you may recall that relatively recently we added the ability to have a 1,000 square foot ADU. And this proposal would not make any changes to the size permitted or the height permitted of an ADU. It would simply allow an ADU to contain two dwelling units instead of one today. So that could be laid out in any way. They can it can be done like this, that's shown here, a side-by-side duplex. It could be done like this with a garage below and one or two units above it. So it would provide some additional flexibility to create that missing middle housing on existing lots without changing the size of the box, if you will, the existing height limit, the existing size that the zoning code already permits. Here's another example of a side-by-side duplex with a garage next to it. The other thing that this code change would do, it would exempt the ADU from the maximum accessory building limit, which is sort of complicated to explain, but basically there is a limit to the total size of all accessory buildings on a lot of 1,000 square feet. And that would include anything like a shed, a carport, a garage. So for example, if you had a property with a 10 by 10 shed, a 100 square foot shed, rather than being able to build a 1,000 square foot ADU, you would only be able to build a 900 square foot ADU. So this proposal is to not count the ADU towards that maximum, so that even if you had a shed like that, you could still build a 1,000 square foot ADU on your property. And then the final step here is basically just the timeline and the next steps in this process. So we're here tonight, September 25th, for the Housing Policy Committee. It will then go to a public meeting next Tuesday on September 30th. That'll be a virtual Zoom meeting at 5 p.m. Then Plan Commission, October 6th, and then Common Council, October 28th. So kind of gives you an idea of the timeline there. And with that, I'll open it up to any questions or comments.
Are there any questions from the committee?
Can I ask a question?
Please do.
Okay, thank you. So I have a few questions mostly related to the lot width and lot area minimums. So I noticed that TRV1, it looks like the highest intensity use is getting normalized to, let's see. The 3 to 4 unit lot area is being normalized to the 3,000 square feet. That is the same for the single family detached and the two family two unit, but SRV1 and SRV2 are not having their lot widths normalized. So for SRV1, for instance, multifamily 3 to 8 requires 60 feet of lot width, but single family and two family require 50 feet of lot width. I know we did a normalization effort last year. Is there a reason we aren't normalizing those lot widths as part of this change?
Give me a minute, I can find that among the 17-page document. That's okay. So you're referring to the 3 to 4 unit single
The
family attached in SRV1?
no, I'm referring to the 3 to 8 unit multifamily in SRV1. And the
1500 per dwelling unit. So that is less per dwelling unit than would be required for a single family home. We require 5000 per dwelling unit.
I was referring specifically to the lot width, which is
I'm
60 feet.
sorry, lot width. Yeah, so lot width for a 3 to 8 unit building, that's for the entire site, not just for each dwelling unit. It's not kind of calibrated in that same way per dwelling unit that like our two family twin is, our two unit and our single family. So that really wasn't something under consideration for this one because it's not as simple as some of the other code changes. 3 to 8 units is a lot different building type often and style of building than like a single family. That's something we could look at in the future, but it's not something we considered as part of this zoning code change.
Okay, I mean, to be clear, it's more like for our TRC zones last year, we normalized the lot width in the lot areas, and I'm wondering why we aren't normalizing that 60 feet to a 50 foot, which would be the same as the single family or the two family uses.
Those don't have a lot area per DU in the same way that we do with the 3 to 8 unit in the SRV1 and SRV2. So it's just kind of a different way of looking at how we do density in these higher density districts versus a TRC3 or a TRC4. So that just is a little more complex to think about
So for the
because we have a per
SRV1,
DU, right? That would you have a much bigger lot for an 8 unit building versus a 3 unit building. The way it's done in SRV1 and SRV2.
yeah, for SRV1, I'm looking at SRV1 permitted use 3 to 8 units, and the lot width isn't per DU, it's just 60 feet. And then if you look at single family detached in SRV1, its lot width is 50 feet.
We typically haven't done like a per DU lot width
I'm not
for.
asking about doing a per DU lot width. I'm just saying, why aren't we making that 60 feet, 50 feet for the 3 to 8 units?
Because it. Yeah, basically, I would say just it's a little bit of a different model because we do have a per DU for lot area in these districts.
Okay.
So I think we would want to think about how those pieces interact since there is a per DU lot area to do a lot width that's not associated with lot area. I think we just want to do some kind of test fits.
Okay. So
Where's the line?
you don't want to adjust the lot width because there's a per DU lot area.
I think it's not as simple as how we did it in some of the other districts because it wasn't a per DU for lot area. There's just a little bit more complex. Those others were very simple code change that because they kind of have the same parameters for both lot width and lot area and not in a per DU. This we have lot area as a per DU, but not lot width. So what does that mean if we're going to a different lot width, but the area still has to change depending on how many units you do? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's a map showing the number or where the lots are that would change, that would allow backyard lot splits as part of this change. But do you have a number handy for how many?
Yes. Yes. So under the changes that were adopted in July, our estimate was about 3,800 properties would benefit from that. But with these changes, that number would increase to about 6,300 parcels. But one thing to be aware of is that's a very sort of high level estimation based on lot depth and lot width and area. You know, the location of the existing house might make it difficult to divide a lot, or the ownership of a property might make it difficult to divide. So that it's not to say that all 6,300 of those lots could be split tomorrow. It's more just sort of a general idea of like, these are the type of lots we have in the city, and here's how many of them would benefit from that change.
Okay, thank you. And then this is something that, Katie, we've talked about before, but in, I think specifically, I'm trying to pull up this analysis, TRV1, TRV2, and TRC4, because of just the historic nature of those zones, even though they technically allow 3 to 4 units by right, there's a significant number of substandard lots that don't have enough lot width or lot area to be buildable by right. You'd have to get a variance. Is there any plan at looking at those and trying to bring the number of adjusting the standards for those zones to enable, you know, I think at one point it was like 75% of the lots were buildable by right, but 25% you couldn't even build a single family home by right because they aren't big enough. And so is there any thought to adjusting those and not just looking at backyard lots?
You know, I can't confirm any particular math of how many of non-conforming. I know a big part of the effort with the zoning code, the new zoning code that was put in place in 2013, was legalizing existing conditions as much as possible. I didn't catch all the districts. I think you said TRV1, TRV2, and TRC4.
That's right. Yeah.
Correct, Dr. Lohovich. Okay. So I think TRV1 and TRV2, one of the changes that's proposed as part of this package is to reduce lot area per dwelling unit to match with historic patterns of density to legalize that. This is something we've thought about a lot. I think one of the examples, I don't know if it was one that Jacob shared here, but on the website, we were looking at like corner lot splits. That's often an easier way to split lots. Well, historically, in a lot of these districts, that's what happened. Is they were a corner lot initially, and then they split into two or maybe three lots. What is difficult about legalizing isn't necessarily the lot area, it's all the setbacks that are really hard to figure out a way to make the setbacks work if someone's gonna build those new. Today, the zoning code, you know, works vast majority of the time. We don't have to do a lot of zoning variances. And I don't think we want to put ourselves in a position where to build on these lots, we want people to have to get a bunch of variances. So I think we have to probably do a deeper dive into things like, how do we look at setbacks on a lot where, you know, it's a very small lot area and it's very hard to fit a reasonable sized house on this and meet the setbacks. But that could be something we could look at in the future.
Okay. And thank you. And just to clarify, for those setbacks, are you thinking like zoning setbacks that are more related to perceived density and neighborhood feel, or are they like setbacks for building code requirements? Like you might need to add a firewall or something like that.
Yeah, I was referring to zoning code setbacks, which do, you know, sometimes relate with building code requirements as well, of how far away are buildings from one another, and then what additional building code requirements do you have. But no, I was thinking through the zoning code setbacks that we have made some adjustments to over the years, but to allow some of these really small corner lot splits like we've seen historically, we would have to really change a lot about how we do setbacks.
Okay. Thanks, Katie. Thanks, Jacob.
Yeah, I think the other piece I didn't mention is just also like there may be no room for a shed or a detached garage or anything. All these things that we typically have set up the code to allow a way to have those things on these lots, but the smaller you go, the more it becomes impossible under any standard to kind of have those typical residential things that you can do.
Mike, please go ahead and jump in with your question.
Yeah, less of a question, more of a response just to that last comment. At least personally, I think my preference would be sort of sacrificing that trade-off of not being able to like guarantee folks' ability to put like a shed in the backyard or have some of those you know, kind of ancillary features if that's sacrificing more housing units or housing units in desirable areas of the city. I want to encourage us to sort of stretch our imagination when we think of what a comfortable sized unit looks like. I think a lot of us are accustomed to a certain size of apartment or house, and there are a lot of folks that can do with smaller spaces and would much rather be in an area in a smaller house in a desirable neighborhood close to where they work or kids go to school, et cetera, rather than having, you know, kind of our traditional sized homes with a shed in the backyard, but they're out on, you know, the outskirts of town. So I think we're moving in that right sort of direction. And you know, I appreciate the work that everybody's put into this most recent set of proposals with the Housing Forward Initiative, but want us to keep, you know, kind of pushing ourselves in that direction. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion, questions, or comments? All right. Well, we can take up each item separately. Do I have a motion on agenda item number 2, Legislature number 89916, which addresses lot division and subdivision processes?
I'll make a motion to recommend endorsement, recommend passage.
Thank you, Will. Are there any seconds?
I'll second.
Thank you. Discussion on this item. Please go ahead, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks. I think, well, this is definitely a step in the right direction. I think we have a lot of work ahead of us in still allowing a lot of the housing types that we're currently seeing in Madison that we enjoy that, you know, especially in my neighborhood, in the Marquette neighborhood, if my next door neighbor's building were to be torn down, it could not be rebuilt in the same way that it is right now. And I think some of these requirements that we're addressing today, like lot width and lot area, are a significant factor at play. That these houses go right up very, very close to the lot lines and are oftentimes larger than what we'd permit. So I do think it's a step in the right direction, and I'd like to see us continue to make progress on that front.
Thank you. Additional discussion or comments?
I just want to second what Mike said. I think this is a step in the right direction, but I do think we can do a bit more in the future. And I look forward to working with staff on analyzing and creating some of these changes.
All right. Thank you so much. Hearing no other comments or questions or discussion on this motion, I would suggest that we once again take this motion up with the concept of unanimous consent. And please raise your hand if you do not support the motion to adopt Legisar item 89916. Seeing no hands, I believe the item has been adopted. Thank you. Moving on to item number 38991. This is related to simplifying zoning standards for infill housing, especially related to the step-down rules for larger buildings adjacent to residential districts. Do we have a motion on this item?
Move to recommend this item.
Thank you, Alder Matthews. Any seconds on that motion?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mike Tarby. Okay, discussion is open on this agenda item related to the step-down rules for larger buildings. Please go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I know this was one of the items that we got a public comment on, and just sort of wanted to share my perspective. I think especially in a city like Madison that's growing as quickly as it is, we've seen a lot of situations where we have buildings that are required to meet this existing 25-foot step down. And then a few years later, the property right across the street that they were forced to step down, in proximity to, has been reconstructed and is now, redeveloped into a higher use. And so it's sort of painful to look back at those situations and kind of wonder, like, why did we give up those extra housing units if now we've just increased the use across the street, which I think should be happening. I think we should be continuing to, gently densify and increase housing options for folks in particularly the most desirable areas of the city. And I think our existing regulations kind of shoot ourselves in the foot when it comes to, our goal of trying to increase housing choice and availability for folks in the city. So likewise, think this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you. See Alder Matthews' hand.
I just wanted to also mention that comment that we got earlier, and that and now after your comment, Mike, I'm somewhat less confident in my understanding of the situation. But I think the way that I understand it and from this presentation is that not only could it be like a future use, but literally there could already be like in this example of even the 52 feet, there could already be a 52 foot building across the street, and currently it would still have to step down to that 25, no matter what. So I think it definitely makes sense to have that be more in line with, like, it really is bringing it more in line with the rest of the district rather than for even current use of the space. So I think that's a good move.
Thank you. I thought I saw a hand. Oh, Jillian, please jump in.
I'm a little sick, but also with the public comment and everything, I think just all of these amendments bring to mind how gentle of changes they really are to zoning. Like Jacob said, I mean, all of those things could be approved through conditional uses already. So it's just streamlining a process, but these things were already possible. I don't think that they're to be feared with these gentle increases. And Jacob, I thought you presented that well.
Thank you.
For
Further discussion on the motion?
If I could add one other
Please
thought
do.
That Jill's comment brought to mind, which I appreciate, or Jillian's comment brought to mind, with the to the point about conditional use permission being like existing for these types of changes, I think it's important to call out that yes, they are already happening today with conditional use approval. So what we're doing is we're easing that process, which the longer construction processes take, the more costly they get, and the more costly they get, the more rent tends to be for, you know, those future residents. So these are steps towards ideally making housing units more affordable for folks in the Madison area too, not just getting more units onto the market faster.
Thank you. Okay, I appreciate
it. Wait, to that, yeah, also stacking units is way more efficient in construction and will help future residents with rents. Stepping back is just a more costly construction process altogether. That's my last one.
Thank you. No, this is a great discussion. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else who would like to add a comment or a question at this point? Okay, seeing none, we will once again utilize the unanimous consent procedure. So please raise your virtual hand if you are opposed to the motion to recommend adoption for amending various sections of Chapter 28 to update the existing step-down rules for larger buildings when adjacent to a residential district. So that's, once again, please raise your hand if you are opposed to that motion. Seeing no hands raised, the motion passes. Thank you all so much. We will move on to agenda item number 4, Legistar item 89918, amending sections within Chapter 28 to allow detached ADUs to have 2 units and not be included in maximum permitted use accessory size structure. Do we have a motion on this agenda item?
Make a motion to recommend approval.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Alder Ulchowitz. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Tarby. Let's have discussion on the item.
I'm seeing Alder Matthews' hand.
Thank you. I did not see that yet. Please go ahead, Alder Matthews.
No worries. I just wanted to comment on this one as well. We have the public comment, and I think it was laid out really well in the presentation, but that having the 2 ADUs, it's still the same amount of space that they could have taken up before when it was just 1. Not that you could have double the amount of space for those ADUs. And then I guess I'll definitely have to look at it a little bit more with how it interacts with like the garages and things like that. But I think that's still something, I mean, that will be limited by the amount of space you have, and it's not gonna, I don't see that causing problems necessarily in my neighborhood or in any of our neighborhoods, but I appreciate the
Thank you so much. Additional comments on this item are most welcome. Okay. If anyone sees a hand up, please let me know. I do not see any other hands up. I think we can move on to consideration of the motion via unanimous consent. So this is Legistar item 8, 9918 related to allowing detached accessory dwelling units to have two units and not be included in maximum permitted use accessory structure size. So please raise your hand if you are in opposition to the motion. Otherwise, we will assume you are consenting. I see no hands raised. The motion passes to recommend adoption. So thank you all very much. That was a great discussion. And thank you, Jacob, for the presentation. Next up, we have agenda item 5, business by members for upcoming meetings. Heather, did you want to walk through these items?
Sure, happy to. Thank you, Chair. Just based on your recent input from past meetings, staff is suggesting that the next few meetings would include a return of the housing snapshot, so an almost final version at your next meeting in October, including the humanizing the data piece that we talked about at a couple meetings ago. I do want to thank Hannah Renfro for extra time on that piece, and we're making some progress on that important piece. And then for the November meeting, we're anticipating another round of ordinance changes. And then finally, in December, at your last meeting, it was requested that we try to pull together a presentation on the city's land banking efforts, and it looks like we are good to go for that at the December meeting. And so, again, just wanted to kind of lay out here quarter three and the intention based on your input so far for the next three meetings.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Is there any discussion on that item about business coming up over the next 3 months? Please go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I was wondering if staff would be able to share any information with Housing Policy Committee about if pre-approved housing plans have been something that we've considered. I know there's been conversations surrounding pre-approved plans for ADUs specifically, but folks might have heard recently Kalamazoo, Michigan adopted a series of pre-approved plans, and they've seen a lot of success with that. And I think as one of our Midwestern neighbors, it kind of intrigued me. They're anticipating about 11% savings from those construction projects due to the elimination of architect fees. So about $35,000 for roughly a $400,000 construction cost. And yeah, mostly the questions I'm curious about, is this something that we've already considered for non-accessory dwelling units? So for either, single family detached, duplex, triplex, four unit, do we think there's the possibility that this is something that would be beneficial for the city? Are there opportunities for pre-approved plans that match existing building types in Madison? I know I've had some conversations with folks where, one of the concerns has been just the specific requirements that might exist for a given lot or a parcel. And I hate to always circle back to my own neighborhood here, but I'm seeing a lot of buildings that look very, very similar. A lot of the kind of 2.5-story or, three-story stacked duplexes that seem pretty copy-paste for the most part. So it seems like that's a great place to start. Again, there are some existing barriers with minimum lot sizes and lot area requirements and lot setbacks. But curious if that's something that we've considered and if there's, possibility on that. So I'd love any information that staff would be able to share in that regard.
Great. We can keep that in mind for future meetings, and I can have some conversations with folks in building inspection and get back to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you both. Any other? Oh, please go ahead, Laurel.
Thanks. I'm just going to add on to what Jillian and Mike said, especially because, Jillian said filled up. I lived in one of those 2 to 3 duplexes on Winnebago for quite a while before we moved to Fairview. And I always wondered why it was so short, especially, we're not anywhere near the capital. I'm sure there are some zoning reasons for why it is so short. If we could look into those, I think that would be specific, because if that area could be a lot taller, I think a lot more people would get to enjoy those neighborhoods.
Thank you. Just kind of scanning to make sure I don't miss any hands. Oh, Mike, please go ahead.
One more topic that I'm curious about, and this should be the last time I'll talk today. Do we have any information about how tax increment financing is working in Madison with regard to housing development specifically? I've heard some high-level information about like commercial and like retail uses of tax increment financing, but I'm curious how we're seeing that play out when it comes to housing development. And also the scale that those investments are being used at, it seems like it tends to cater pretty heavily towards larger projects. But I'm curious if we're seeing folks take advantage of that for kind of the missing middle housing type that we've been particularly focused on in recent years. So thank you.
Sure. Thanks for that. I think we may be able to weave in some of that with the land banking update. Folks from economic development may be able to provide some good summaries of that. I know we have been tracking that pretty closely, and so we'll consider that for an upcoming meeting, perhaps as soon as December.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I did one last scan of the Zoom room and I see no other hands raised. So the next item would be adjournment. Do we have a motion?
I move we adjourn.
And a second.
Second.
Thank you. The meeting. Let's do unanimous consent. Any objections to adjourning the meeting? Seeing none, we are adjourned. 5:24 p.m. Thank you all. Thank you to the staff. Thank you for the excellent presentations and questions, and to the public for commenting.